This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
A former first lady passes away. We go there now on Tactics. Good morning, everybody. Welcome into Tactics, right here on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 is the way to get in touch with me if you want to call in. You can also tweet me at Tactics Radio. We read your tweets on the air whenever we get a chance. So there is any way that you want to get in touch with me. You can also do it on Facebook, facebook.com/Tactics Radio. So if you want to get in on the program, let me know what is on your mind this Wednesday morning. We are halfway through the week, and that is something to be commended. But there is some sad news that I want to lead off with. Barbara Bush, the wife of H.W. Bush, has passed away. Former First Lady, she has died at age 92. On Sunday, it was announced that they were now more concerned with making her comfortable than they were with actually saving her life, because it looked like there was not a whole lot of hope. And unfortunately, yesterday she passed at age 92. So we lost somebody that was really an icon when it came to our nation. President Trump has ordered flags to be flown at half staff. He issued that order almost immediately after hearing of Barbara Bush's passing. He said, and this is just part of the statement that he released, "On this solemn day, we mourn the loss of Barbara Bush, an outstanding and memorable woman of character. As a wife, mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, military spouse, and former First Lady, Mrs. Bush was an advocate of the American family." And that is a true statement. And I believe that to be a very high compliment. Someone that was an advocate of the American family, who believed that that was one of the fundamental building blocks of our society, of Christian life. That, can you imagine really, how many of our problems would be solved? How many of these issues that we're having in our country would be non-issues if we had better moms and better families? I'm not pointing out to any one specific group of people. I'm just saying in general, if we had stronger families in this country, our nation would be much stronger. When we did have stronger families in this country, our nation was a lot stronger as a society. We didn't have a lot of these political divides that we're talking about now, and I know that we tend to look at the past with rose-colored glasses, and I'm trying not to do that. But by several measurable rubrics, we had less issues with crime. We didn't have nearly as many people that were unproductive. And there's a number of issues that lead to these problems. But seriously, and this is something that I think that Barbara Bush understood and talked about, when we have strong families, a lot of those problems are resolved before they even happen. And I do wish that our country would go back to a time where we did have much stronger families across the board. Because a lot of our societal woes, a lot of the bad decisions that people make, unfortunately, are at least in part due to their upbringing. Now, some people can have every advantage, have a great family, great mom, great dad, and they still wind up not doing what they should. But if we did have stronger families as a whole, I believe that our society would be in much, much better shape. That we would not be attacking each other the way that we are. That we would not be degrading and casting away our fundamental freedoms the way we are now. And I'll say this about Barbara Bush. I don't even really like the title First Lady. It bothers me. I think it's borderline, if not over the line in some ways. that we even refer to someone as First Lady as though that's some kind of official title, because in the Constitution, it's specifically laid out that we're not supposed to give courtesy titles. That's why we don't have kings and lords and dukes and all the things that British common law had. And the First Lady gets dangerously close to that because, despite being married to the president, she is not an elected official, and yet she has a budget, she has an agenda, she has, you know, there's actually taxpayer dollars that go towards programs that she supports, that kind of thing. I have no problem with her helping her husband. I have no problem with her even advocating for certain policies, which Barbara Bush did quite often, and I don't have an issue with that. The only problem that I have is that there is an actual budget and an allotted amount of money that goes to the First Lady to handle those things. Nonetheless, even though I have some misgivings about that, and even though I didn't always agree with her or her husband, there was no question that I always respected her. And you have to keep in mind that they were in office before I was even born. And the Bush family, the Bushes as a whole, they certainly have their flaws. I didn't always agree with everything W did when he was the president. Jeb is not my favorite politician, to say the least. I even have some issues with H.W. Bush. But here's the thing that I have never questioned about the Bushes. They are patriots and they absolutely love their country. And Barbara Bush was no exception. Whether I agreed with her on policy issues, which I mean, often I did. I don't want to paint it like that Barbara Bush and I didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, because we did. But more important than that, I respected her and I respected the Bush family because she was such an advocate for the American family, and I respected the Bushes because they were patriots, and you can tell that even when you disagree, they love their country. They think it's a great place to live. They love the people here. They love the culture. There is a great sense of pride in them, in the fact that they are from the United States of America, and they think it's the greatest place to live on earth. They absolutely love it, the way they talk about it, the way that most of the men in their family have served, at least in some capacity, in our armed forces. There is just a very genuine, very palpable patriotism that comes from this family. And with Barbara Bush specifically, she was very loyal to her husband. She was dignified. She had this air about her that commanded respect. And you could always tell based on the way that she spoke that she was in a sense soft-spoken, but she certainly was not timid. And I think that was a great quality to describe her as well. That she was outspoken, but it never came off as, you know, for lack of a better way to describe it, naggy or vindictive. It was always, I think, a good way to describe it would be the way the Bible talks about it. Her language seemed to me, at least from what I saw of her, to be seasoned with salt. And, you know, I knew people from both sides of the aisle that really had this kind of abiding respect for Barbara Bush. A good friend of mine that his mom, I remember having a conversation and somebody said something untoward with regard to the Bushes. This is back when W was in office, and specifically made a crack about Barbara, and it was her own son, and she snapped back at them very quickly. She's like, "Don't you talk about Barbara like that." And this woman is incredibly liberal, by the way. But I did always admire that about her, that even people from the other side of the aisle had a respect for her. And that's not something you can say about a lot of modern politicians. But really where this all goes down to and where I want to kind of wrap this up, pray for the Bush family. Losing somebody like Barbara Bush, somebody that's kind of the matriarch of the entire family, somebody that was such a giant and such a center point of that family. Because even if this weren't a famous family, even if it weren't specifically Barbara Bush, you lose a woman like that that's kind of seen as the leader of the women in her family. I know my family went through that. Actually, not too long ago. And it was incredibly difficult. It was difficult around the holidays. We didn't know exactly where we were supposed to go because we had always gone to Grandma's house. That's just where you met. You didn't know exactly, you know, you had lost a part of the family. The family didn't function the way that it did before because it had lost one of its most important members, one of its most important leaders. And I imagine the Bush family is going through exactly the same thing right now. So I would urge everybody within the sound of my voice, doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on, doesn't matter if you're particularly fond of the Bushes, because if you're looking strictly at policy, I have a lot of misgivings about the Bushes myself. That doesn't matter. Pray for this family. Pray for the loss that they had with losing really the only way I think that is appropriate to describe it is one of their matriarchs, one of the leaders of their family, and of course, a beloved mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother. So please keep that family in your prayers. 860-1440. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
My soul I resign into the hands of my almighty Creator, whose tender mercies are all over His works, humbly hoping from His unbounded mercy and benevolence through the merits of my blessed Savior, a remission of my sins. Governor George Mason, Father of the Bill of Rights.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and News Radio 1440.com. 860-1440. Sorry about that. So what's going on here is we're trying to have a conversation through the soundproof glass in the News Radio 1440 studio. Me and my program director, Joe Hunk, who, by the way, is, of course, from Sports Radio 740. He's going to be on here tomorrow to discuss a little sports and politics. It is funny, though, there's this kind of culture between radio people that we almost have our own version of sign language, because there's always these scenarios that come up to where we're, you know, doing some kind of broadcast. We can't exactly stop and talk, or we're in a soundproof room and we don't actually want to interrupt or open the door. So we almost have our own sign language, and it actually works. Like, I don't know why, but we all just kind of know the symbols, know what particular gestures mean. And it's kind of funny. Like, we never actually got together and formally agreed on these things. It just kind of happens. But you know how it is with your workplace. I'm sure every office building has your quirky little traditions or whatever it is like that. But Joe and I just gestured at each other two or three times back and forth, and we knew exactly what the other one was talking about. So I don't know. I just found that kind of humorous. All right. We do have another story to talk about that has been really blowing up on social media. Social media is the reason that this story has gone viral. And for those of you who are unaware, it deals with Starbucks. Now, full disclosure, just before we get into this, so you know where I'm coming from, I don't particularly like Starbucks. And it has nothing to do with the corporate structure, whatever, because they do tend to be very liberal, very progressive. They do a lot of progressive things. They support a lot of progressive causes, and we'll get into that in a second. But if anyone wonders if I'm defending Starbucks here because I like Starbucks, the truth is I don't. I don't like their politics, and I don't like their stuff. Because regardless of what their politics actually were, if I liked their product, I would probably go there depending on a couple things. Now, I'm going to give you a reason in a minute why I don't think that I would go there even if I didn't have an issue with what they politically believe because of what they monetarily support through their corporation. However, when it comes to Starbucks, I really don't have a dog in this fight because I don't like coffee. I've never liked coffee. In fact, my parents actually gave me coffee when I was a kid because I had trouble staying awake and trouble paying attention when I was younger. And one of the doctors actually recommended, you know, just give him a little caffeine shot early on in the day. That'll help him focus, that kind of thing, because he was thinking that I was having too low energy and that's why I had a hard time focusing, which, by the way, was not a great strategy anyway. But nonetheless, this was the recommendation that he gave. And so my mom fixed me coffee to have with breakfast every morning. And so for people who say it's an acquired taste, well, I drank it every morning for about a year and I still hated it every single time. So I am not a coffee fan. I've never liked coffee. I've tried it 150 different ways. I've tried Frappuccinos. I've tried cold coffee. I've tried it with like 80% not coffee in it, with, you know, caramel and all kinds of other stuff. I've tried it every single way, and I cannot like coffee. I detest the taste of coffee beans. So I say all that just to give you some background that I'm not saying this, and I'm not, if I defend Starbucks at any point in this, I'm not doing it because I like the product. But nonetheless, so here's the story, and just to give you some background on what's going on. So the story is there's these two guys, happen to be black, come into a Starbucks. They ask to use the bathrooms. The manager says, no, you can't use the bathrooms. Those are just for paying customers. You can't just walk in off the street and use the bathroom. That's against our company policy. You're welcome to buy something if you want, and then you can use the bathroom, but the bathrooms are just for paying customers. And so the apparently they piddle around for a little bit. They wind up going in and using the bathrooms anyway, even though the manager told them that they couldn't. And then they're sitting around waiting a little bit later. Eventually what happens is these guys are waiting around. He confronts them. They say, no, we're waiting on a friend. And so the manager apparently waits a little longer, gets fed up with it. He calls the police officers. The police arrive. The police arrest these two guys. About the time that they're being arrested, their friend shows up that they were evidently waiting on. And that's really where you see the video that has gone viral of these two guys getting arrested for loitering in a Starbucks or trespassing. I'm not sure exactly what the charge was, but that's the big story. And unfortunately, and I think most of you, if you haven't heard this story, you're just now hearing my telling of it, you are probably pretty sure exactly where this is going. Because the two guys involved happen to be black, of course, the only reason that the manager could have possibly followed company policy and had these guys escorted out because on multiple times they didn't listen to him as far as using the bathroom, telling them that they have to move along if they're not going to buy anything. The only reason that he could have possibly done that is because he was black. Because that policy, I guess they thought, maybe doesn't apply to white people or Hispanic people or anybody else. I'm not sure exactly where that idea comes from, but the point is, they believe that it was racially motivated. That's the story that has been put forward. However, right now, there is absolutely no evidence that it was racially motivated at all. Stores have policies like this all the time. It's actually pretty common for a store, especially a restaurant, to have a policy you can only use the bathroom if you actually buy something. And restaurants generally don't care for people hanging out, loitering, staying in their restaurant, staying in their dining area unless they're going to purchase something. Now, did this guy react a little too quickly or maybe a little too overbearing? We don't know a whole lot of those details, but maybe so. But the point is, there's no evidence it was racially.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
Philippians 1:21. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440. Those are the numbers. If you want to call in, you can also tweet me at Tactics Radio. And there's a couple things that I want to let you know about before we get back into our subject with the Starbucks story. First of all, we have coming up here in just a minute, we have Scott, the manager of the Biscuits. He will be the general manager, not the not in the dugout manager. The general manager of the Biscuits will be coming on the program to talk to you about all their great promotions, which I'm really looking forward to. You guys know how much I love baseball. And after that, we have Rhonda Walker, who is running for the state Senate. She is going to be on with us, so that's something else to really look forward to. Got a full show, but we're going to go ahead and finish this up real quick. So with the Starbucks story, the video only shows really what happens once the police get there and they start taping the arrest, which, you know, to these guys' credit, they didn't fight back. They complain a little bit, but they don't, like, resist arrest or anything like that. They don't make any more of a scene than it already was, which I guess it's hard to not have a scene made when someone's being arrested. But so far as I can tell, these guys probably were a little obnoxious, probably a little annoying for the manager who's just trying to enforce store policy, but it doesn't seem, at least based on this video, that they were belligerent. So, you know, again, it's possible that this manager acted a little more heavy-handed than he should have. It's possible that he reacted a little too quickly. Maybe he should have been a little more patient waiting for them to see if they were going to buy something once their friend arrived. But here's the issue that you run into. Regardless of your color, regardless of any of the circumstances surrounding, a fair policy is one that treats everybody fairly. And just like if I, as a white person, had gone in there and wanted to use the bathroom, I would have to buy something, so would they. And just like I can't just loiter in a dining room waiting for my friend to show up unless we intend to make a purchase. And keep in mind, these two had already used the bathroom despite the manager saying, no, you can't do that, you have to buy something first. And so he had no reason to believe them because they had already gone around him once when they said, well, we're just waiting for our friend, and, you know, kind of implying that they were going to buy something then. He had no reason to believe them at this point. Apparently, they waited for a little while, and then he calls the police officers. There's no violation of law here whatsoever. He followed company policy, so far as I can tell. And the people that have spoken out about this, the people at Starbucks, have said exactly the same thing, that maybe there's an issue with our training, maybe there's an issue with our policy, and we'll look into it. But as far as how this guy acted, this is not necessarily something that he was doing that exceeded his authority as the store manager. So stores have policies, like I said. This is a common store policy, especially when you're talking about restaurants. Maybe not so much convenience stores or gas stations, but definitely when you're talking about restaurants, typically they expect you to make a purchase if you want to use their bathroom, because otherwise there would be people just coming in and using the bathroom all the time, and that would be an inconvenience for the actual paying customers who the bathrooms are there for, because that's the only reason any of these businesses has a bathroom in the first place, because it's convenient for their customers. They're not a public service. They're not obligated to offer their facilities to everybody that happens to walk past their store. They're not a charity organization. Those things are there for their customers. And so I don't see why it would have been such a big deal if they had just... I mean, all you have to do is buy something. I realize that a cup of coffee at Starbucks is like $8, but if you want to use the bathroom there at Starbucks, you know, maybe find something off of the dollar menu or something. Just buy something, and then you can use the bathroom all you want. You're a paying customer. You can sit there as long as you want, talk, finish your milk or juice or scone or whatever it is that you bought. That's really all you have to do. Or don't eat it right then. Wait, save it till later. But the point is, all you had to do was make a little bit of purchase, and all of this goes away. If you just played by the rules, if you just want done what the manager asked, which is either don't use the facilities, don't loiter around here, or make a purchase and then you can stay as long as you want, if they had just abided by that, none of this would have happened. And I say this because I've been a shift leader at a restaurant before. I've had to kick people out for loitering. I've had to kick people out that just came into our restaurant and tried to use the bathroom, or came into our restaurant and just sat in a booth and started, I don't know, doing homework and things like that, that didn't seem to have any intention of actually making a purchase. I was a shift leader at the Moe's in Auburn for a while. I was a shift leader at the Moe's in Prattville. I've had to do this before. And it has nothing to do with race. It has nothing to do with hating the person or disliking the person, but that's the company policy. And as a manager, you're supposed to enforce that policy. I mean, maybe you can give a little leeway here and there at your discretion, but as a general rule, it is your job to enforce that policy, because that is what's good for business. That's what's good for your brand. And because of that, that responsibility does fall to you. I've been in that guy's position before. There have been times where I kicked out even paying customers because they were causing a disturbance or something like that. Usually this had to do because we were butted right up next to Skybar in Auburn. But nonetheless, my point in all of this is, you know, I don't like it. It's not a fun thing to do. I'd rather not do it, but that's the company policy. And especially when you're, if it's a rush or something like that, I don't know if this took place during a rush or something, but you know, you got to clear out space. You have room for the paying customers. You don't sacrifice the convenience of your paying customers for random people that come in off the street that don't intend to buy things. And this guy had, so far as he could tell, based on his experience with these two individuals, which was very short-lived, they were just bums coming in to use the restroom and just sit there and wait for somebody and didn't seem to have any intention of ever actually making a purchase. Now, maybe that was incorrect. Apparently, they really were waiting for a friend. Whether they would have bought something once he got there, you know, who's to say? But this is a Philadelphia Starbucks. I have a really hard time believing that they don't serve black people on a pretty regular basis. And it's not like the prices are higher for black people or something like that. So this was a policy that was, as far as we can tell, equally enforced regardless of who it was. And of course, they had a second video at a different Starbucks somewhere else in the country where they tried to recreate the thing. And there was a black guy that was taping it that said, well, there's this white guy here who's standing in line. He hasn't made a purchase yet, and he got to go to the bathroom, and I haven't. Well, here's the problem with that. When we're looking at videos like that, we're only seeing one half of the story. We're only seeing the aftermath. Maybe that did happen. And if there was a manager at Starbucks that let the white guy go to the bathroom before making a purchase and didn't let the black guy do the same thing, that's an issue. However, you have to keep in mind that we're not seeing the whole story when this video takes place. Maybe it was the way it was presented. Maybe the guy went in, went straight to the bathroom, then came out and placed his order. But either way, I do think it's awfully convenient that less than 24 hours after this story breaks and goes viral, that the very next thing that happens is allegedly exactly the same thing happens at a Starbucks halfway across the country. Look, Starbucks is an incredibly liberal, progressive company. And so it's hard for me to buy that they are they're not breeding, like, it's not a front group for the Klan or anything like that. And so this isn't company policy. So let's just say for the sake of argument, that this guy absolutely was a racist, that he only called the cops and had these guys arrested because they were black. That was specifically the reason that he did so. Let's just pretend that that's the truth, even though there's no evidence for that. Even if that's the case, it makes no sense to protest Starbucks as a whole, as a corporate chain, because of the actions of one store manager, because obviously this is not their policy. It's not their policy to discriminate against black people. That's what I mean by that. It's not their policy to arrest black people just for walking into their store, which is kind of the narrative that they're running with now, even though, like I said, this is a Philadelphia Starbucks. I have a hard time believing they don't serve black people all the time. But my point in all this is, even if that's the case, even if this one store manager happens to be really racist, then that person should obviously be fired. But it still makes no sense to protest Starbucks as a whole, as a corporation, as a chain, because that's obviously not their policy. And what if this were reversed? Because some people might, you know, say, because I'm a conservative, that that's the reason that I'm sticking up for the corporation or whatever. Well, do you remember the Red Christmas Cup thing? Where there were Christians protesting Starbucks because they switched to just a red cup during December as opposed to having the actual Christmas cup. Because when that happened, I said, guys, you're being silly. And that actually was a corporate policy. That was something that the actual decision was made in Seattle at their headquarters. And it was a brand-wide thing. And I said, guys, you're being silly. It's a cup. Does it taste any different whether it's in a red cup or a brown cup or a Christmas cup? And so I feel like we're just so eager to jump on board the boycott bandwagon, and it doesn't really make any sense. Because there was a time when restaurants actually would refuse service to black people specifically because they were black, and that was wrong. But now people are going so far in the opposite direction that they are demanding that they get the right to use your amenities for free without making any kind of purchase, and claiming that they should be able to do so because they're black, because anything else, anything less than that is racist. If they do not get that, they're claiming a racial injustice of some type has taken place. Those amenities aren't offered to anybody. That's the store policy. If you want to boycott Starbucks, and I'm not calling for it, I'm just letting you know, if you had a good reason to boycott Starbucks, boycott them because they give millions of dollars to Planned Parenthood. That would be a good reason to boycott Starbucks. In fact, you can make a far stronger case, especially considering how many black people are killed every year by Planned Parenthood because it's a much higher rate than any other race. In fact, if you are a black baby in New York, you're more likely to be aborted than you are to be born. And Planned Parenthood is a large contributing factor to that. They set up specifically in minority low-income areas. That's where their clinics are. And their founder, Margaret Sanger, said that it was her mission to eliminate human weeds like black people off of the face of the earth. So you could much more easily make the case that Starbucks is racist because they give money to Planned Parenthood. If you want to make that case, and if that's why you don't want to frequent Starbucks, that I kind of understand. But boycotting all Starbucks everywhere because this one person who we don't even know whether the incident was actually racially motivated or not, it just makes no sense. 860-1440, we'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440, that is the way to get in touch with me. You can also tweet at Tactics Radio. And I've got here guest in studio with me, Scott, General Manager of the Biscuits. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey,
happy
what's
Biscuits Week.
Yes, absolutely. I love having you guys over here because you always keep us up to date on what is going on down at Riverwalk Stadium, because of course there's always great baseball going on. That's a given. But you guys have so many promotional things that I love to hear what's coming up next. And y'all have something for the next 3 days, don't you, with this homestand?
Yeah, we've got a homestand that started on Monday and we end on Friday. So it's a nice weekday series. But we've worked all offseason to put together a lot of fun giveaways and promotion, things like that. And it really kind of ramps up to gear this week. Tonight is our first Military Wednesday of the year. So if you're current, former, retired military, come to the game tonight, you're going to get some discounted tickets, you're going to get some discounted food, and we're also giving away probably the most adorable giveaway we've ever done in Biscuits history, and that's our Monty the Biscuit pillow presented by WOW. So if you haven't seen it, get on our Facebook, get on our Twitter, take a look at it. This thing is adorable. Monty is our little biscuit character with the googly eyes and butter tongue. So we made a little throw pillow out of him. So it's actually great for flights, which is why we're doing it on our Military Wednesday, because they're traveling so much. It's a great little neck pillow.
Of course, we got a lot of Air Force people.
Exactly. We're giving that away to the first 1,000 people who come through the gates tonight. Gates open at 5:30. Game starts at 6:35. So come out and get this adorable little guy.
Yeah, when they said pillow, I was thinking something that's like slightly bigger than your hand. Because, no, this is actually it's a pretty good size pillow.
It's the shape of it's perfect for a neck pillow. So
it really
right
is.
Behind there. Yeah,
because you got the cleats. There's like a little bend there where your neck could go.
Exactly.
But, no, it's a great giveaway. You guys really do a lot of great things with those promotions. And I know that especially all the military people, because there's so many of them right here in the River region, they really appreciate all the things that you guys do for the military.
Yeah, absolutely. Shout out to SOS if you're out there listening. These guys have been out there Monday night, Tuesday night, and they're coming back tonight. They've just been rowdy and just really getting into it. So we always love having the military guys out at the stadium because, again, it's a fun release for them. Gives them some chance to bond with their comrades and everything like that. So it's a great way for them to spend the night out. We love having them out and obviously everything that they do for us. So tomorrow night we keep the festivities rolling with our first full Thirsty Thursday. That's not opening night. So we're doing our Mardi Gras night. The Millbrook Revelers know how to throw a party. They're going to come down. We're going to have a crawfish boil. So you'll be able to come down for about $15. You'll get a plate full of crawfish and potatoes and corn and Kaneka sausage and be able to snack on that for the night.
Is that one all you can eat?
It's not all you can eat, but it's very heavily portioned. We're basically doing family-style servings.
So, in other words, it's not technically all you can eat, but you're going to walk away full.
You're
so
going to walk away
full. It probably
full.
Is going to be all
you're
you can
get
eat.
You're going to get about 5 pounds of food for $15.
Yeah, so. Well, that's not bad.
Exactly.
For sure.
In addition to that, we also got a Mardi Gras themed t-shirt we're giving away to the first 1,000 fans over the age of 15. It's got a great little Mardi Gras design on it. It says, "Let the good times roll." So again, just really fun night tomorrow night. And then Friday is our Pink Out the Park Breast Cancer Awareness Night, which is a really important night for us. And we're partnering with Joy to Life. Their walk's on Saturday. So if you register for their walk, you have a chance to get $6 tickets to the game on Friday night, complete with Max fireworks. The team's going to be wearing pink jerseys and pink hats on the field. We're going to auction off the jerseys for charity, obviously Joy to Life. Right. And then we have a lot of special on-field ceremonies with former breast cancer survivors and things like that. It's going to be really kind of feel-good night, but also a lot of fun.
Absolutely. You know, I actually, this is kind of unrelated to what we were talking about, but it reminded me of it. Our friend Jenny, who has come on the program with me several times, she's a breast cancer survivor, has talked to me about that and talked to me specifically because I was declared cancer-free just recently myself.
Yeah. Congrats.
Thanks. We did she had a scare just recently, but it turns out everything's good. She doesn't have cancer again. So a lot of prayers answered there, and I appreciate the listeners praying for her as well. But yeah, great events going on. Really appreciate that y'all do that for the community, and because you guys really do, you're great citizens of the community. You guys really do want to help, and I can tell that in all the preparation that you put forward to these charity nights.
Yeah, and that's the goal. You know, we're not a baseball team here trying to win games and win championships. We want to help our community. You know, we want to grow downtown. And again, the story you tell about Jenny, there's a lot of people out there just like her. And so Joy to Life does a lot of great things, and if we can help raise some money for them, we're going to do it.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
No problem. Thanks, Gab.
All right. We'll be back. Hour two coming up.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
I've got special guest and Senate candidate for the Alabama Senate, Rhonda Walker. She joins me now on Tactics.
Just try your best. Try everything.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440, those are the numbers. If you want to call in, ask some questions. You can ask questions for me, ask questions for our guest, and you can do that. Or you can tweet at Tactics Radio, have your tweets read on the air. So nonetheless, it is hour two, and as promised, we do have Alabama Senate candidate Rhonda Walker joining me in studio today. Good morning.
Good morning. So glad to be here.
Yeah, great to have you with us. And I did want to talk. To you about a couple things. Really, with everything that's going on in the state right now, what motivated you, and what made you think now was the time to be in the Senate? Why do you want to be in the Senate, especially at this particular time?
The Republicans have had control of the state house since 2010. They've done some things right and they've done some things wrong. And I think we've had time over the past 8 years to get used to being in leadership. I think there was a curve there at the beginning, but we're hitting our stride and we're making some good decisions. And I think it's time to get some new blood in there and conservative, aggressive, reasonable people in leadership.
Okay, excellent. Well, I remember one of the first times that I'd ever heard you speak about policy was at that Tea Party meeting. That's actually where you and I met. And I remember that one of the questions that was asked, and I don't know if I asked this question. This sounds like me, so okay. It may have been me.
Okay.
I asked about what would be the first thing that you would want to do in office. Like, what would it be? What would be the first bill that you would sponsor? That kind of thing. And I remember that you answered that you thought that it would be most important to start with overhauling the budget-making process. What exactly did you mean by that? What would that look like?
Well, and that doesn't necessarily mean I have legislation in mind that would fix that. I think the number one problem we have in the state and with our legislature is the way we budget. About 95 or 98% of the budget is earmarked. So as the tax dollars come into the state, they're already dedicated somewhere. And nobody takes the time to say, is that where it should be going? It's been going there for years. So when we have new problems arise, when we have issues arise, whether it's Medicaid or infrastructure or whatever it is, there's not money to move around because it's all already earmarked. And it's just a very frustrating, frustrating budgeting process.
Well, now, as far as the earmarking things go, would you be in favor of eliminating earmarks?
Well, it's complicated. I would be in favor of overhauling what is currently earmarked. We need to look at that. There are some things that absolutely need to be funded by the state, and if they weren't earmarked, they would be overlooked, and they would never get a foot in the door. But then there are some things that, well, that's just the way we've always done it, and I think that's a bad way to govern.
No, I agree, and one of the issues that you have with any legislative body is that, especially if something's been done a certain way for a very long time, they just kind of don't question it, and that's
correct.
Just something that is assumed to be the way it's supposed to be, and
correct.
They move on. Is there anything specifically that you can talk to me about as far as the budget goes? Something specific you think, this should not be earmarked, this is something that we need to look at, and maybe another example of one that, okay, this is an example of why earmarking works and a good idea mm-hmm. to have this earmarked.
Not necessarily a specific example, but one thing that I work on the county level that drives me crazy is duplication of services. If we have five different groups that are providing, let's say, senior services, five different senior centers in a county, or one group that's providing services for veterans, five groups that are providing services for veterans, they're providing the same service for the homeless, for summer programs for children, whatever it is. They're all doing the same thing and they're all getting a little bit of money. Why can't we bring them all to the table, sit them all down and say, what are the goals of your group? What are the priorities of your group? And let's all work together. Let's stop splitting up the money because the resources are so limited. Let's stop splitting up the money. Let's figure out what your different strengths are. And you know what? In some cases, maybe we need to combine groups. People don't want to combine groups because then they lose their power if they cede it to someone else. But that's smart government and that's efficient government. So those types of things I would be an advocate for looking into.
Well, I actually agree with you on that. However, you're going to catch some blowback for that because this was one story that I remember very vividly. It's just an example on the federal level of where this took place. There were five post offices literally within about a mile and a half of each other, all of them. And a lot of the people in the town, when they were surveyed, they say, yeah, they should shut some post offices. That's wasteful. And they ask, well, which one you shut down? Well, not my post office.
Not
and
in
so
my backyard.
So they didn't want, because they didn't want the one that was closest to them to shut down because it was convenient. And so you're going to catch a lot of that. How would you respond to people that are going to come back with that? Well, we don't want to shut down this one because that's the one that affects me. How do you deal with that?
Well, it's unfortunate. And as you know, the general public, the electorate, whomever, they'll pound their fist on the table and say, we need to cut spending. We need to cut spending. We need to cut spending. Okay, so let's cut some spending. And if you study the issues and you look and you really make reasonable suggestions, and then they throw their hands up and they say, not in my backyard.
Right.
So it's
everybody has their sacred cow.
Everybody has their sacred cow. So at some point, as a leader, you have to make tough decisions. Mm-hmm. And people are going to be mad at you and they're going to be frustrated. But you know what? I'm willing to make the difficult decisions when the time comes. But I'm also going to be willing to show up. You know what? I'm still going to come to your HOA meeting, even though I know you're mad about X, whatever X is. Or I'm still going to come to the community event because we need to talk these things through. And I'm going to be willing to say, gosh, this was a hard decision. This is why I made it. This is the data that I used to back up my decision. And I know you're upset. And I'll let you take your pound of flesh. And let's talk this through. And let's move on to the next issue.
Okay. Well, you're going to catch a lot of flack for that, but it
Caleb,
sounds like you're ready for it.
Politicians catch a lot of flack for everything.
Well, that's
every
true.
Day.
I'm
that's
just saying.
Nothing new.
I'm just saying it's partly frustrating for me too, as somebody who's also kind of a financial hawk, that everybody does talk about, like you were saying, we have to cut spending, and they'll say that till they're blue in the face,
yeah.
And then when you go item by item and say, well, what do you want to cut? They don't actually want to cut anything.
Exactly.
And that's the problem
exactly.
that you're running into. Speaking of spending and government money, tax day was just the other day, of
yes,
course.
Yes, it was.
which was a lot of fun for all the people filing at the last second like me. And there was a bill that just recently expanded to online retailers. Basically, it's not technically a new tax, but it's the tax bill that went through. The governor signed it, and it expands basically the parameters of the online retail tax to include even third-party retailers, even individual retailers if they're selling to people in the state of Alabama. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you think you would have supported?
The Amazon tax is what you're referring to.
Well, technically online. Amazon was already taxed. I'm talking right. about this
expanding.
One expanded it to like third-party vendors and whatnot.
Well, and we all know what's happening. Our local brick-and-mortar stores are being devastated by online retail. You go into a retail store here, they don't have the supplies. They don't have the inventory that they used to have. You can't get things locally at some stores. So people tend to buy online. People buy online, therefore the inventory goes down locally. It's a back and forth. Yes, I do support that online retailers need to pay the tax, because we are suffering, especially our municipalities and our counties are suffering because of that lack of income.
Well, now, of course, it did wind up bringing in quite a bit of revenue. There's no question about that.
Right.
However, I would just make one point that they've done study after study on this in states that enacted an online retail tax, and they found out that the states that did compared to the states that didn't. As far as the brick and mortar, the argument is usually that it's unfair.
Right.
They found that the effect of that, less than 10% of sales were impacted. And of the ones that did when the taxes were enacted on online retailers, a little over half of them actually wound up going to other online retailers that had a back door to where they didn't have to pay the tax. So did it affect the brick and mortar places? Sure, but not very much.
Okay. Well,
but
we
now
know
there's no question it brings in revenue.
Well, and this is an evolving problem. Mm-hmm. This is a problem that we didn't have a few years ago, and this is a problem that wasn't foreseen. So I agree that I hear your back door, and it's not perfect, but we need to work towards equity in the retail marketplace, whether it's online or local.
All right. Well, that's Rhonda Walker. She is running for the Senate right here. She's actually running for Senator Brubaker's seat.
Correct.
Because he will not be returning. He's retiring,
right.
Of course. District 25, and we will be back with more with her in just a moment.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 13:34-35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440, that is the way to get in touch with us, or you can tweet us at Tactics Radio. Speaking of phone calls, let's go to the phones right now with Miss Daisy on line one. Good morning.
Good morning, dear. How are you this morning?
Doing good. We are here with Rhonda Walker, who is running for Alabama Senate. Did you have something that you wanted to ask her?
Yeah, I want to make a statement. Good morning, dear. How are you this morning?
I'm great, Miss Daisy. How are you?
I was very pleased to hear your statement, especially when you made the statement about putting a person together. That's how we accomplish anything we go to do. And that was a very excellent statement that you made.
Thank you.
We need someone like you to have that type of thought.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that so much. I'm a big believer in relationships. I love people, and I want to pour into people and find out what people's ideas are, what they're good at, and make sure that we're plugging people into the right places.
Excellent, excellent, excellent statement. Thank you, dear.
Yeah, thank you, Miss Daisy. You have a good day. I appreciate it. Always good to hear from Miss Daisy. And one thing that I wanted to bring up, because I did want to ask you this. Like I said, there are a couple bills that I think went through that just to give us kind of an idea of how you would vote in the future.
Sure.
If given the opportunity. Where do you think you would have stood on the bill to arm teachers, the Answorth bill that he put forward, that would have allowed school teachers to arm themselves, carry concealed on campus?
I am... My father was in the Army for 25 years and was a championship marksman, and my husband is a Marine. We're a gun family. My children, we've got four children, and each of them were trained at about the age of seven in how to use and respect firearms. So I have no issue at all with carrying, I'm a strong Second Amendment advocate. With regard to schools and safety, number one, there was a, as there always is, there was a knee-jerk reaction when the most recent school shooting took place. And there always is a knee-jerk reaction to blame it on the guns. Well, it's not the guns, it's the evil people using the guns. And if we take away the guns, then they're going to use a knife, then they're going to use a truck, then they're going to use a fertilizer bomb. We've got a problem with evil in this world, and it's not a problem with guns. It's silly to make that correlation. But that said, we have a problem with evil. Now, what can we do to reasonably protect our children from this evil? I have two children in elementary school. They go to Delrata Elementary School here in Montgomery. And I was, as their mom, the day they came home for the first time and told me that they had a shelter in place drill. And I said, well, tell me about it. And they did. They said, you know, the alarm sounded, or the principal came over the intercom, and they had to curl up in a ball and get shoved into a little cubby where they would normally hang their backpacks. And the doors are locked and all the safety measures are in place. And again, as a mom, I was mortified that my children are even having to endure that. The days of simple tornado drills are over. But what we learned is, what if a gunman had come to their class, their little third grade class? What is the teacher going to do? The last school shooting, the teachers were putting their bodies in between those students and the gun, and they lost their life.
Yeah, there were two teachers killed in Parkland.
Yes, it's devastating. I want them to be protected better than that. I want the teachers to be protected, and I want my kids and your kids and our kids to be protected better. So how do we do that? Number one, we need to make sure to fortify the schools a little bit better. Have one point of ingress and egress, not multiple ways you can get in around the school. We need to shore that up. We need, and if there are teachers to get to the Ainsworth legislation, if there are teachers who are trained and permitted to carry firearms, I don't have any problem with them carrying their weapon concealed to school. You do get into a interesting conundrum on a high school level when you might have a teacher who is smaller in stature than some of their students. And this was one issue that was brought up as just a curious that we would need to think through. Could some high school students overpower a teacher and take their weapon? Would the kid even know that the teacher had a weapon? I wouldn't think that anybody would need to know if a teacher was armed or not.
Well, I can say as someone
unless in
who,
the event of an incident.
I can say as somebody who actually applied for teaching jobs, who considered going into the field of teaching, and someone who's a concealed carry weapons permit holder, that even if I was armed on school, nobody would know it.
Correct. Agreed.
Now here I'm fine with my job telling everybody that I'm carrying right now, but I don't like at school. I wouldn't have broadcast that for sure.
Agreed.
But nonetheless, I did want to ask you about that, and I appreciate you responding to that. There was one other bill of particular interest to me, and I know that my audience is very familiar with this. It's House Bill 317, which is the one that allows lobbyists to designate themselves as economic development professionals and thus go around not be beholden to the laws and the regulations on lobbyists in the state of Alabama. Is that something that you would have supported?
In 2010, when the ethics, the Republicans took over, and the ethics law really came onto the scene, it's evolved some. Most every legislator I talk to says that there is some level of misunderstanding. Now, does that mean there's pieces that are purposefully vague? Probably. Does that mean that there's some things that are contradictory? Maybe. I don't know. But I do hear that from legislators that you and I would probably respect. But any attempt to water down ethics laws in the state of Alabama is wrong, wrong, wrong. It's unfortunate that our leadership has to have a law to tell them to do right or wrong, to behave correctly. I don't need a law to tell me what's right and wrong in this regard, with regard to ethics. I know what's right for me is what is going to help me lay my head on my pillow at night and sleep, knowing I did the right thing for the right reasons. So it's astounding to think that we would want to lessen ethics laws in the state, especially in a time that we see so much corruption.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I wanted to get into specifically about that one, though, because it gave this, it essentially created a new classification, but didn't give any qualifiers around it. And that was really the issue that you run into, because if it just very, very broadly, and granted with the amendments, it did change a little bit, because it said that you can't declare yourself economic development professional if you just got out of the legislature for 2 years or something like that. So there are a few more provisos on it than originally. But with this specifically, it basically just opened the door to, as long as you're involved with some kind of economic development, then you don't have to register as a lobbyist. And that was really the issue that I think. What's your stance on the way that bills are worded, I guess, is the way that I'm trying to get to that, because this one was very loose. There was not a lot of definition. What do you think that you could do in the Senate to try to tighten that up and tighten up that process and make laws a little more specific?
Don't you think that's done on purpose?
I absolutely believe it was done on purpose.
Well, and it's part of the problem is, you know, you and I live in this area. We're citizens. We don't understand every detail that's going on in the legislature behind closed doors.
I don't even think the legislators ever stand every detail about what's going on.
I don't think so. When you have 1,000 bills coming up each session, there's no way any one legislator fully understands every single piece of legislation that is proposed each session. I think that's one of the problems. But people who are making an earnest effort in the legislature to understand and to straighten out some of the things that we need to deal with in our state, I believe it is my role as a senator. My role would be twofold. One, to make sure laws are transparent, to make sure there's a proper fiscal note with each piece of legislation, meaning how much is this going to cost? What is going to be the money that comes out of this?
Oh, I don't Sometimes think you're going to fit in on the legislature. You're supposed to pass things and not ask those questions.
Well, I think it's important to ask those questions. And also, what are the unintended consequences down the road? But sure. Also, it's my responsibility as a leader, as a senator, would be to get out to the public, to explain what's going on, to say, this is the legislation, this is why I support it, or this is why I object to it. Let's talk about it and make sure that I'm effectively communicating to the people that I represent about the legislation. So to remove part of that confusion, because confusion breeds fear. Sometimes we're confused about things that are perfectly great, but we're confused and don't understand them. Therefore, we have a tendency to fight them or object to them. But let's make sure we're all on the same page and we understand the legislation.
Okay. Now, one last thing before we do go to a commercial break. You talked a lot about, you touched on this a little bit with the county commission and your time there with one of the things that you were able to cut down on is repetitive services. So I wanted to ask, are there any other skills as far as being a county commissioner that you think will transfer to being a legislator, to being in the Alabama Senate?
Sure. I haven't been on the county commission for very long, but we have a $110 million budget, so I understand the need to scrutinize how departments spend money, and I understand the hiring process, and we've been on a hiring freeze for several years at the county. We don't need to add, and you know what we have learned from that is we're doing just fine with the number of employees that we have. We don't need to add positions and grow government in order to perform to an efficient level. So those are some of the things. But also I've connected with individuals, the mayors in this area, homeowners association presidents, community groups. I know who the people are, and I know generally the values that they hold.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to go to a break here in just a second. But before we do, if someone wants to support you, somebody wants to get involved with your campaign, how do they do that?
Sure. Again, my name is Rhonda Walker, and that's R-O-N-D-A, Rhonda without an H. My website is voterhondawalker.com, and you can connect with me through my website, voterhondawalker.com. My email is voterhondawalker@gmail.com.
All right. And one thing that we're going to do, and I ask you about this ahead of time, but of course the audience didn't know because we were in a break. A lot of people don't know this about you, but you're actually also a cancer survivor.
I am.
Like myself. And I wanted to ask you a couple questions about that, but you're going to have to wait until after the break
sure,
to hear that.
I'll be happy to.
All right. We'll be right back.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
The great pillars of all government and of social life: virtue, morality, and religion. This is the armor, my friend, and this alone that renders us invincible. Patrick Henry.
Welcome back. You're listening Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. Welcome back to the Situation Room. I am here with Rhonda Walker, who is running for District 25 of the Senate in Alabama. But one thing that I did want to talk to you about is that, like me, you are a survivor of cancer. Although I don't think I'd technically get that designation yet because it hasn't been long enough since they weren't able to find it in me. But nonetheless, I was just wondering, since this is something that is near and dear to my heart, obviously, if you could tell us a little bit about your story and that process that you went through.
Sure. I'm just 3 years out from my story. It was Christmas of 2014. It was a week before Christmas. Mm. And I found a lump in my right breast and went to the doctor. And they determined that it was cancer, and it was a pretty sizable tumor. Mm. And that I was going to need, it was actually two different tumors, two different types of cancer. And that I needed to start chemotherapy immediately. And as a mom, my number one concern was my children, and it was Christmas. So I did what we have to do, and I put on a brave face and forgot about all of that, and we had a great Christmas. And my husband and I didn't really tell the kids anything until we had to. But I started chemotherapy right after Christmas. On December 29th was my first of 8 chemotherapy treatments, which lasted for 4 months, and then surgery, and then radiation. And then I had a 14-hour surgery to follow that up. So it was a full year, 2015. It was a full year. I had, although my cancer was bad and advanced, I had a treatable type. And thankfully, the hand of God was on my body and on my doctors, and they got it all. They either through surgery or through chemotherapy, the cancer's gone.
Well, thank goodness for that, because yes. I got to tell you, I was very grateful. For those of you who don't know my story, I actually had, it was just one tumor, but it was two different types of cancer as mm-hmm. well, which meant that, you know, it was much more difficult to get rid of. Mm-hmm. And so you've been through that. You understand what that's like. And I was just so grateful for the medical staff that was there. I do believe that God was there guiding them as they were looking over me and trying to help me get better. But, you know, I feel almost a little bit guilty because my surgery was an outpatient procedure. It took maybe 45 minutes to an hour. And my chemo was pretty rough, and the last round was especially rough, but compared to a lot of cancer patients, I actually had it really easy. And so I do think that there is just a level of gratitude that comes with that, that I'm sure that you can attest to as well, to living in a country where this is something that can be detected, something that can be treated, and that we have such great facilities and such great doctors and medical staff that can help us through things like this.
Absolutely. But any time that you're told you have cancer, regardless of where it is on the spectrum, all cancer is not created equal, but it's terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
So even though your treatment and process wasn't what some others were, it's terrible and it's terrifying. And it was a brutal year physically, but I came out of it. It was the fire. It was the valley of the shadow of death. But I walked through it. I walked through it in the power of Jesus Christ in me. And that is what I leaned on, and that is what sustained me. But now, having been through that experience, I'm a much different person. I have a different intensity for life. I have a different appreciation for life that I would have never developed had I not had to endure the misery of stage three cancer. I live my life much more intentionally now. I don't have the fears of the silly little things that I used to have before. I know that I have today, and I'm not promised tomorrow. So what am I going to do today? My purpose in life is to glorify God and to help people. What am I going to do today? Because we're not promised tomorrow, folks. And so I have just such a desire and such a passion to serve my children, my husband, and my community today as best that I can.
Well, and I will say, as somebody that's gone through it, even though mine was not probably nearly as intense or as long as yours, going through that, even as somebody like me who was 28 years old at the time, and I'm still 28, it makes you keenly aware of your mortality and your frailness. Because I'm a big guy, 6'2", muscled up. I'm used to being able to physically do pretty much whatever I want to within reason. And when that hit me, that completely changed.
Yeah.
And like you were talking about just a second ago, it does make you realize that you may not wake up tomorrow, and it just gives you that awareness, and it makes every day like a gift.
It does. It absolutely does. And so what are we going to, how are we going to use the time that we do have? What are we going to focus on? Are we going to get stuck on silly things? I had to work through a lot of fear, because like you said, you come face to face with your own mortality and you know that you could die. This could kill you. I was 42 years old and that was not supposed to happen. Then there was a day that I was literally on my face on my living room floor begging God for my life. And God asked me, why do you want to live? And I said, for my children. He said, no, why do you want to, you know, what do you want, Rhonda? And I said, I want to live a healthy life. What do you want, Rhonda? I want to live a healthy, long life with my family. He said, no, what is it that you really want? And he revealed to me, my desire is to live a life without fear. And he said, you got it. That's a promise he can make us. He can't promise us that we'll live a long life, healthy and pain-free, but he wants us to live life without fear, and that is something that he has given me through this process.
You know, one of the verses that I play on here quite frequently, it's one of my intros. It says that God says, I will never leave you, nor will I forsake you, for what can man do to me?
That's right.
Because if God is on our side, there's really nothing else in this world that should make us anxious.
Nothing at all. And it's Peter on the water. As long as he kept his focus on Jesus, he was fine. As long as we keep our focus on the vision that God has given us for our life, we are fine. But when we look to the left and look to the right and we see the storms around us, we see the negativity or the complaining or the daily circumstances that are tough, we begin to sink. We've got to keep our focus. We've got to keep our armor on and our eyes on Jesus.
Yeah, and that's a perfect synopsis of that story, because the storm was there whether Peter was looking at it or not. The difference is where Peter chose to keep his focus.
That's right.
But thank you so much, Rhonda. I appreciate you being here. That's Rhonda Walker, and we have the Chaplain's Report coming up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. You can follow me at Tactics Radio. Thanks so much to Rhonda Walker for coming in and not only talking about her campaign, which of course was fun, but most importantly, sharing her story and talking to us about that. As somebody who's been in a similar situation, I can tell you that sometimes it's easy to talk about it, sometimes it's not. But regardless of which side of the aisle she happened to fall on, I do appreciate her being willing to talk to us today. And I did want to talk about the chaplain's report today. Jeremiah is prophesying about the captivity of Judah in this particular passage. So he is a prophet, so he's foreseeing what is going to happen to Judah, what is going to take place, what is going to befall them. And in Jeremiah 13, 22 through 24, he states, "If you say in your heart, 'Why have these things happened to me?' Because of the magnitude of your iniquity, your skirts have been removed and your heels have been exposed. Can the Ethiopian change his skin or the leopard change his spots? Then you also can do good, who are accustomed to doing evil. Therefore, I will scatter them like the drifting straw to the desert wind." The Bible is pretty clear that sometimes, despite your best efforts, despite doing the very best that you can, sometimes horrible things happen to really good people. We were just talking a few seconds ago about cancer happening to me, cancer happening to Rhonda. So sometimes, despite your best efforts, no matter what you're trying to do, or no matter how, even though you're doing the very best that you can to try to make the best out of this situation, sometimes you wind up suffering even though you're doing the right thing. And this is something that happens countless times in the Bible with good people. But sometimes we suffer as a result of the things that we've done. And the language here is really interesting. It talks about the skirts being removed, the heels being exposed. That was a sign of humiliation in their culture. That's something that they would have understood. And so Jeremiah is trying to explain to the people here the reason that you are experiencing these horrible, humiliating events taking place in your life is because what has happened is you have fallen prey to the results of your own iniquity. This is something that frustrates me when I talk to people who are scoffers or skeptics of God. They often do view incorrectly, and maybe because of bad experiences they've had or whatever reason, that they look back and they see God as essentially this killjoy that's just making arbitrary rules because that's what he thinks is right. That's not who God is. And in fact, he usually explains specifically why his commands are done the way that they are, whether it's having sex only between a man and his wife, whether it's not lying, whether it's being honest in your business dealings, whatever it is, whatever life advice that is contained in the Bible and whatever command is given to abstain from sin, those things are not arbitrary things. God doesn't just pass commands because it's what he feels like should be done. These things are done for our betterment. They're done because they're the right way to live. And when I say right way to live, of course, I mean morally correct. But what I'm also saying is it's the best way to live. It's a way to live that when God governs our life, the things that he's telling us, the advice that he's giving us, he's not just telling us those things so he gets to run our life. He's telling us these things because those things, if we live by them, improve our life. When we are honest with people, when we treat people like we would want to be treated, when we are compassionate and empathetic, those are things that benefit us directly. Maybe not in a monetary way or in an obvious way, but those are things that really do make a difference in our life. And so this harsh punishment that he's bringing upon them, it's not so much that God is doing something terrible to them. It's more like he's no longer protecting them from the consequences of their actions. And I think we've all had parents that kind of did this, at least at one point or another, that we would persist and try to do something over and over and over and over again. Or at least I know that I did. I know this might be hard to believe, but I was a bit stubborn as a child. And there would be a certain time to where my parents would have to look on me like, "All right, that's what you want to do? Okay." And they would just let me do it and suffer the consequences of my actions. And that's what God is kind of doing right here with Judah. He's saying, "Well, I tried to tell you, I did the best that I could, but if you're just going to insist on defying me, then you're going to have to suffer for that. I'm not going to protect you from everything. And that's exactly what happened to Judah. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.